Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Oh, Miles here.
Your outpost for the week is freshly delivered, and I, of course, am just one of the hosts here, Matthew Rushing, and with me, as she is every single week on this incredibly magical journey, Drea Kaufman.
Hello!
Hello, hello. Do I see the little ball of light going into your chest?
Oh, yeah. Little right ball there, of light. Right to my chest, making me feel all warm inside.
Oh, man.
Bet y'all can guess what happens in this chapter.
Yeah, you know what chapter we're at. We're at chapter 19, The Silver Doe. And yes, we are going to meet a little ball of light that helps Ron find Harry and Hermione again, which is going to be really fun. But before we get to the chapter, of course, you can find us wherever you get your podcasts. If you do happen to be on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or any of those places, make sure you're subscribed so you get the show as soon as it drops. If you are on Apple Podcasts too, give us a star rating review. Let people know where you find the show. And we read those reviews out on the show as well. You can also find us on Twitter at Join Nerd Party. We're on Facebook at facebook.com/TheNerdParty. Instagram at The Nerd Party. And of course, you can go to TheNerdParty.com where you can find out all the shows we're doing. And you can go to the contact section and you can send Drea and I an email if you'd like. So, Drea, this chapter really kind of follows up on the last chapter in the sense that it is going to be... It's literally a couple weeks here that pass for Hermione and Harry where they're not talking to each other too much and they're basically just moving from place to place. And it's getting closer to the Christmas holidays, in fact, because, you know, as Harry's usually keeping watch, he's gotten used to getting out the map, the Marauder's map, to look at Ginny, and then he realizes, oh, she's gone for the Christmas holidays, and so he can't even do that anymore.
Well, I mean, we're in the Christmas holidays, because Christmas has already happened, right?
That's true. You're
She's
right.
on yeah. the holiday break from Hogwarts because right. the whole thing with the giant nightmare snake
was
the thing
Christmas.
That's burned
right.
into yep. my mind forever was Christmas Eve. So we've hit Christmas and moved through it now. But yes, Ginny is not at Hogwarts. There's really nobody at Hogwarts. So he doesn't really even have this sort of like small little luxury that he gets to sort of pass the time or give him comfort anymore, which is rough because, you know, we all have the things taken away from us this year that we can't do or be or see anymore. So we can relate to you, Harry. We can relate.
Yeah. I mean, it's gotta be difficult, you know, when you have that one lifeline and then that's gone too. And so, as he is, you know, sitting there guarding one night, they've arrived at the Forest of Dean because where they were before was quite windy. And so they at least get to the forest where it's not quite as windy, but it's still really cold. And
well, what you skipped over is they left not only because it was windy, but because it was sort of playing tricks on their mind, mm-hmm. right? They kept thinking they were hearing people or seeing people and they were worried that the enchantments didn't take right. And it was windy, and it was just sort of this miserable both physical and mental situation they were in. And so they felt like, let's just start over and try this again somewhere yep. else that's maybe a little more comfortable. And it turns out the Forest of Dean is still very cold, but at least it's not like windy, blistering level of cold, which I have no personal experience with, y'all. So
having lived in Minnesota,
how miserable that is.
I can tell you, when it's 30 below... with the wind blowing, it's pretty cold. So,
yikes.
Yeah. So I doubt it's that cold for them here, but it's still very cold. I mean, they are just basically camping. You know, they've been huddled around the little fires that Hermione can make. She's got these great blue flames they can even put in a jar and carry around with them and stuff. So, you know, that's nice. But, during one of Harry's nights here in the Forest of Dean, doing his sentry duty, he ends up seeing a bright silver light that is right ahead of him, and it turns out to be a beautiful silver white doe which he follows into the forest. And I love the way she puts this too, because of all the things that Harry has seen recently, she makes a point to write that Harry instinctively knows this is not dark magic and he can follow it comfortably. And so as he runs after it, she pauses and then disappears, and Harry lights Hermione's wand that he's still using and finds there is a frozen pool there in the forest and catches a glint of something. And it turns out to be none other than the Sword of Gryffindor.
Okay, first of all, whenever you say Gryffindor, it's Gryffindor!
Gryffindor wins!
Yes, that's what I hear every time. Yeah, it's amazing. I do love, though, that he trusts his gut, right? You mentioned that he knows it's not a dark magic. There's no logical anything that tells him that. It's truly a gut instinct and an intuition that says this is not dangerous. Well, it's not an immediate threat. Let's put it that way. Like, this itself is not doing anything to me that leads me to an immediate threat. And I really love that. And I do love he finds the sword, and it feels so much more dramatic here than it does in the movie. And I don't know why. I think just because there's more lead up and anticipation to it, and I know it's going to happen, but she still kind of like makes me work for it. So, you know, I do really like this part, and I sort of like that, you know, he tries a couple different things to get the sword to come up before he decides he's kind of going in. And I do like that after he tries all these things and realizes he has to go in, he's like, I don't really know why I questioned it. I knew from the second I saw it under the ice that this was what I was gonna do. And I do love the sort of cynical conversation he has with himself about, like, who said chivalry? Chivalry? Well, I guess I'm not calling Hermione to come swim for it, so that makes me chivalrous, you know? Like, sure, I'm a good guy. Like, what's this conversation he has with himself? And I just thought it was hysterical. You know, we've all had that. Yeah, sure, I'm nice. I'll take this bullet for you. Why not? It's very sarcastic and very fitting for Harry.
Well, and it's so funny because he's just thinking about all of the things that it means to be a Gryffindor, and that's when, you know, he's like remembering when the Sword of Gryffindor comes to those in need. And so he's remembering all of these, you know, accolades that that Gryffindors have had throughout the years that have been assigned to them, like being brave and chivalrous. And yeah, it is really funny because I probably would be thinking the same thing in my head. It's like, of course there's no other way to get this out, you know, than to strip down to your underwear and jump in. Exactly. And so
I do find it interesting they even note he's barefoot, which would actually be one of the worst parts of this,
yeah.
To be barefoot on the ice and the snow before you get in the water. Like, whew.
No, thank you. No, thank you. No, And having kind of done that before, because, you know, I don't know if you've ever been in a hot tub and then you jump out in the snow. So I've done
snow?
That a few times.
What is snow?
Yeah. So I forgot. You live in the land of...
the land of the desert.
That's true. The devil. It's so hot there. But anyway...
I said the desert, but sure. Sure,
it's
we'll take that
same
one too.
Thing.
I still love the King of the Hill one about, like, why does anybody live here? Yeah, I have that moment at least once a year, guys.
Something wrong with that boy. Anyway, so it's great that he gets in the water, and the moment he tries to actually go for the sword, he has not taken off the Horcrux, and the Horcrux is having none of this and begins to choke him and to keep him from being able to get the sword. And as he's struggling, somebody pulls him out of the water, and as he's...
I'm sorry. Death's arms embrace him.
He's about to die, folks.
And then somebody pulls it, like he describes it as... someone's pulling him out of the water, but he thinks it's death's embrace because that's how painful this is. And we're laughing about it, but it's really not
but
that
it's
funny.
To be expected. I mean, he's being choked to death in freezing cold water. So, you know, not only is he
with
getting...
nobody else around.
Right.
So,
not only is he getting hypothermia, but he also can't breathe. So, and it turns out that it's Ron who's pulled him out. And Ron is yelling at him as he pulls him out, basically, are you mental? Which is so funny. And then Ron's like, why the hell would you not have taken this off before you dived in?
I mean, it's a valid question. It's a tough spot, right? Like, you don't want to just leave it sitting around because, you know, that seems dangerous. But then, you know, why would you dive into an icy cool pond of water wearing it? And if anything, it just tells you that he's going for the real sword of Gryffindor, right? Which they question here very quickly is whether or not this is the replica or the real one. But the reaction that the locket has tells you that it's the real one. Because otherwise, why would it try to choke Harry?
Exactly.
Is it an opportunistic locket? Ooh, he's in cold water. Let's try to kill him while he can't fight me back. I don't know. I feel like I always equated this to a direct response to being close to something that could destroy it. And so I think that answers our question about the sword we get to very quickly. But yeah, it's like, are you mental? But besides kind of waking Hermione and having her become part of this, which was probably the smarter option, honestly, I don't know what else he could have done, really. I probably would have made the same choice and just kept it on.
Well, and I kind of, you know, love they have the little conversation like, did you cast the dough? No. Did you? No. I thought that was you. And then Harry's like, no, mine's a stag. And he's like, oh, yeah, I thought it looked different. No antlers, which is just such a boy conversation, I think, to have. And then.
Yeah. It's such a Ron conversation.
Yeah.
Oh.
And
yeah.
And he's like,
I knew it felt weird.
I'm here now. I've come back if you'll have me. And. They talk about whether or not either of them, you know, did Ron see anybody cast the Patronus? And he said, like, I thought I saw something over there, but it could have just been my eyes. They check. There aren't any footprints or anything there. And Harry tells Ron that he thinks that it should be him that destroys the Horcrux. And part of his reasoning in his mind is that he remembers Dumbledore's talk and discussion on these certain types of magic, and she describes it as this like kind of incalculable power of certain acts, right? And so what I kind of love is that Ron here has put his life on the line for Harry and this sword in much the same way that you know his mother had put her life on the line to save Harry. And so Harry equates these two acts and he tells Ron, I think you should do this. And Ron doesn't want to have any part of this because he's like, look, you have no idea what this thing did to me. I can't do it. It can't be me because this thing affects me more than anybody else. And Harry's like, bro, it's got to be you.
But that's exactly why it needs to be you, right? Like that's exactly how Harry is sort of is confirmed that, yep, I'm making the right call. It's supposed to be Ron. Got it. Like, and I do love that, you know, he acknowledges that there's magic and there's elements to magic that he can't quite understand and that are sort of, I think he calls it incalculable, that have these like, these things he can't control, but he just knows it has to happen and go a certain way. And I do like that he acknowledges that and he goes, you know what? I can't explain why, but I know it's got to be you because that's the only way this is really going to work. So, well, like, it's got to be you.
And it shows that Harry has a connection to magic that is deeper than Voldemort's, right? He understands intrinsically the magic that is a part of sacrificial acts. He understands the magic of basically love, right? This is what Voldemort doesn't get, that love is the most powerful magic there is. And Harry does. And like you said, instinctively, he understands this. Not only that, but he understands how to open the locket now. It's the realization, all of these things are finally coming together. We've talked about Harry and his deductive reasoning abilities, but it's like Harry's finally had the puzzle come together in this piece, like this section of the puzzle. It's all come together. He knows it has to be Ron, and he knows how he's going to open it because his experience with Nagini recently has reminded him about the idea of Parseltongue, and this is the perfect way to open. This is the only way to open it. And so.
Well, and I like that he says he knew all along. Like, he said it as if he knew it all along. So it's so interesting because we talked a couple chapters ago, and I think it was the same chapter that Ron left, that Harry felt like he had no direction. He had no idea. He didn't know what he was doing. And now he's in a like in a pivot situation. Like he's in a key milestone of this journey, and he knows exactly what to do very instinctually. And he just doesn't need to doubt himself. It's all there. He just needs to put all the pieces together and be patient.
Yeah.
Which is hard. I mean, that's a big ask, but
And it's a big ask because he's having to talk. He finally is able to talk Ron into this stabbing the Horcrux. But as Harry opens it, it explodes basically and becomes this swirling awfulness. And the movie does actually a really good job of portraying this because it's pretty much straight up what they do in the book, which is great.
Yeah, it's almost verbatim in this scene. And it's it needs visual because
exactly.
You get it here for the most part, but the visual in the movie is much more impactful for me.
Yes.
Like you see it, you feel it, you experience it a little bit more than you do in writing because it's kind of hard to envision it in writing.
Yeah. Well, and it basically torments Ron with every bad thought that he's ever had while wearing the locket, which is, you know, why would you come back? We were better off without you. And then as it kind of turns into this amalgamation of Harry and Hermione standing there in like these beautified, creepy, it's basically, and the way I always think of it is, you know, before we had this movie to show us this, it's kind of what they had done in Lord of the Rings when Galadriel is being tempted by the ring. She turns into this like evilly beautiful, creepy thing, you know, and that's exactly what this thing has become, a version of Harry and Hermione like that. And they torment her. Like she even says to Hermione, like, why would I prefer you when I have him? And then they like kiss and it's just awful. And Ron finally destroys this thing and it knocks them both down. And I really love that the moment he can, Harry comes over to Ron and he says, after you left, she cried for weeks. Like she didn't even want me to talk it to her or look at her. And he's like, dude, she's like my sister. I love her like a sister. I thought you knew that. And then Ron just says, I'm sorry, you know, and it's like this really beautiful moment of forgiveness between these two, because there's a part of them that understands the other more than they thought they did. You know, like they finally had a really tough conversation that they wouldn't have had if they hadn't have been through this whole thing, right? And these are things that needed to be said, and especially between these two. And I think it shows, you know, we've always been hinting at this idea that Ron and Hermione, there's this relationship there, and this goes one step further to just show how deep that is, even though they haven't been able to fully, like, express it yet, that it's there.
Right. Yeah, it's good. It's a good moment for them. And I do love that, I mean, the visual in the movie is really great with the Hermione and the Harry and all of that. But I really missed out on the like rage flashy Ron, right? Because he mentions at some point his eyes go like scarlet or garnet and it's like red and raged, and then it passes. And that would have been a really cool visual. And maybe I'll watch it again and see if it's there. But you can tell that this is really heading home for Ron. And it's kind of sad that there's no processing of it at all, right? Afterwards, they kind of talk about it, but Ron doesn't really say much that kind of tells you he's worked through it. And maybe Ron just doesn't need that. But it would have, you know, I guess I would have liked to have seen him sort of work through it. Because that's like, we literally pinpointed his worst fears kind of. We pinpointed his worst fears as it pertains to the people he loves, right? The only one that we didn't really address, and it could be, we can take it either way, and I'm kind of curious what you think. Either it's changed and fallen away and no longer something he's afraid of. But when we started the series with Ron, he cared an awful lot about what people thought of him. He didn't like being poor. He didn't like having hand-me-downs. He wanted to be treated like everyone else, right? He wanted to be normal. And we don't see that in this, like, tapping into the fears. There's no like idea that there's no idea. I mean, he's kind they kind of hit on the second class thing, but not in the same way we started with his character. So I'm curious if you think it's an evolution or if it's something where he's just sort of outgrown that pain point.
I think it's because the locket just hits on his deepest fears, which are that he was, you know, as it says at the beginning, you were least loved always by a mother who craved a daughter, least loved now by the girl who prefers your best friend, second best, always eternally overshadowed. Like all of the things that drive, like those are all the root at what drives what you're talking about, right? So it's it's almost like that part's implied there because it's really the core issues. And this That's locket fair. Really comes out after him in those core issues. So I don't know if I'd say necessarily it's gone.
It's developed differently, right. Or the superficial right. side of it's maybe gone.
Exactly.
And it's,
like, yeah.
it's just, okay.
Yeah.
I can see that.
I think part of that is because I think throughout the books, Ron has become more comfortable with being who he is. You know, obviously the fifth book we really went through and the fourth book we really went through those jealousy bits with Ron, with Harry. And I think the main jealousy relating to that anymore has just become about the fears he has with Hermione and that, you know, Harry would take her away from him because he would be more desirable to her. And so to truly learn from Harry in this moment that that's not the case, that he'll never take her away from him because that's not how he feels about Hermione at all, which Ron should know because he's, you know, walked into the room where Harry was kissing his sister. So.
Well, but I mean, it's always nice, though. I mean, we get it from like our spouses or our parents or our friends. Like it's nice to have something that you like to have something you already know reaffirmed as true. Right. Like it's nice right. to be told you look nice or someone loves you, even if you already know it. So I feel like that's what Harry did here. Like, I know you know this, but I'm going to say it to you because I think you need to hear it.
Well, and can we talk about that after they have this moment, how he's like, I'm sorry I left. And Harry's like, well, you kind of made up for it tonight. You know, when you got the sword, you finished the Horcrux and you saved my life. And Ron's like, you make it sound a lot cooler than it was. And Harry's like, I've been trying to tell you that for years. Stuff like this always sounds cooler than it was. And
it's interesting because Harry is very quick to forgive. Yeah, no, that was really good. And Harry is much quicker to forgive than I think others might be. We'll find out.
Yeah, well, because they make their way back. And the moment that Hermione sees Ron, she launches herself at him and hits him with every word she says. And he can't get a word in edgewise. And he won't until, you know, the last time when Ron and Harry were arguing, Hermione had to throw a shielding charm between them. And now it's Harry's turn to do that between these two so that Harry can allow Ron to tell her the story. And she's not as receptive as Harry, which makes sense because when you love somebody, they're the person that can hurt you the worst, right? And the way that Hermione loves Ron, it makes sense that she would be this angry at him. And so
Hermione is also not quick to forgive. She's not quick to let things go. She's not quick to move past them. So not only did I think he hurt her in a deeper and different way than he hurt Harry, I think she's also not as quick to move past it. And she's also not as quick to see the benefits of him being back, right? He also didn't save her life from a freezing pool of Horcrux strangling nightmare. And when she hears all of that, you know, she backs down a little bit. But
right.
I do love that it's so bad Harry has to put a shield charm up to keep her from beating on Ron.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, as Ron explains the story of how what happened, he's like, I know you came running after me. The moment I left. I knew I wanted to come back, but the enchantments that we use are actually too good. And then I knew, you know, that Harry wasn't dead, because if that had been the case, you know, like, it would have been all over the news. I mean, like, Harry is all over the Prophet now, and they would have wanted to celebrate that fact. And so,
which I think is something I pointed out a few chapters ago, that, you know, they were so worried about Ron dying or Harry dying that he's like, it would be in the news. Like, they would make a big deal out of it. I'm
right.
Not dead.
Well, and the reason he can't return is because he runs into a group of Snatchers. And this is where we first hear about them. And it's these gangs that are roaming around trying to catch Muggleborns because they can, and blood traders because they can turn them in for money. And I love the way that he gets away from them by telling them he's Stan Shungpike. And they're not the sharpest tools in the shed, because they start arguing over it. And Ron's able to escape by punching one of them and grabbing his wand and disapparating, which he's still not great at because he splinched himself and he lost a couple of fingernails. To which this point, Hermione's like, oh, fingernails, huh? She just goes crazy on him. Like, oh, and she talks about all the ways that they could have died. But, oh, no, fingernails you lost. Oh, so sad.
I do think, well, yeah. I mean, that's funny.
It is funny.
Let's be honest. It's just funny.
Well, and then he tells a story about how he got back to them, which is, it's the Deluminator. And for some reason, the Deluminator, she hears, Ron hears Hermione say his name, which is just right around Christmas when they're talking about repairing Harry's wand. And it's the first time that they had kind of actually said his name since he left. And so he clicks the Deluminator and a little ball of light comes out of it. And that ball of light, he follows it for a second. It enters his chest and it says close to his heart, and like, he knows where he needs to go. And so he ends up on this hill where it turns out the other night when Hermione and Harry thought somebody was around, well, somebody was around because it was Ron.
He was around, yeah. And I like how they don't tell this in the book quite as clearly and succinctly as they do in the movie, right? And they don't say this sort of iconic line that they have in the movie where it says, like, Dumbledore must have known that this would be the way that I went, or that I would need to find my way back to you, which I actually kind of miss, because I do think that that's a nice callback to, like, he must have known, right? And we don't really get that in the book. But yeah, it's interesting, because I think we're slowly starting to see each of these gifts from the will manifest into the needs that they have. Right? Now we know what the Deluminator did. Now we know why he needed the Sword of Gryffindor. And we still have two pieces we haven't quite figured out yet. We've been ticking away at the book a little bit for the last few chapters, but we still aren't quite sure what's going on with the snitch, and I think we don't really figure that one out till very close to the end. But yeah, they all are very methodical, very thoughtfully placed mm-hmm. into their lives.
Yeah, which makes sense, because that's what we know of Dumbledore, right? Like, he right. is a planner, and he is somebody who is meticulous in his planning, and he knows people, you know? Like, he has the ability to understand people in a way that they might not necessarily understand themselves, which honestly kind of makes sense when we think about the fact that Dumbledore's lived a long time, right? So he's seen a lot.
I went with he knows people, as in he has a guy. Like, he has a guy for that. Like, he's got a snitch guy, he's got a sword guy, he's got a Deluminator guy. He's got a guy for everything.
Yeah, I mean, that too.
That's
probably
how I took that. Sorry, go on.
But I do think, you know, Hermione accepts what Ron says. She basically goes to bed, and Harry's like, dude, you said you got a wand from a snatcher. Can I have it? Mine's broken. And Ron's like, oh man, that's awful. And as Hermione is in bed, I just love the little conversation between Ron and Harry. And Harry's like, about the best you could hope for, I think, as they're talking, they're kind of like talking about Hermione. He's like, yeah, could have been worse. Remember those birds she sent on me? And Hermione's listening and she's like, I still haven't ruled that out. It's a like what I really liked about this chapter, I think, is the fact that we had some well-deserved humor at this point. And it really, it felt good to have a victory. Like, this is the first real victory that we've had, right? The Trinity is back together. They're beginning the process of patching things up with each other. And they finally destroyed a Horcrux and have the ability to destroy the other Horcruxes because now they have the Sword of Gryffindor. So, you know, things are looking up right now.
Yeah, we definitely needed some hope after the last few chapters and after sort of just the dreariness of where we were, both weather-wise, which we've talked a lot about, because why not? This is actually not the Owl Post. This is the Weather Channel, y'all. but no, I mean, we definitely deserved some more of a hopeful message at this point. And while we don't really have a direction to go from here, I think this is sort of a catalyst for more movement in the story. And, you know, it's I'm ready. I'm buckled in. My coat's on. I'm ready to go.
Yeah. And I mean, honestly, it's just going to continue into the next chapter because we are, the next chapter is called Xenophilius Lovegood. And so, and honestly, that chapter is a big one as well as to kind of explaining something that we were talking about earlier. So, but before we start ruining it at all, Drea, where could people find you?
So I can spoil everything and make, you can all just resent me for it? Yeah, that's a good one. You can find me on Twitter at PCFChick or on Instagram at Drea Kaufman, and it's COFFMAN.
All right, and you can find me on Twitter, Instagram, Letterboxd, and Vero under the name MattRushing02. You can also follow the 602 Club, which on Twitter there, which is the podcast I do over on TFM, which is our general geek show where we're talking about all of the fandoms we love. And it's so much fun. We talked about Harry Potter, and we've talked about just about everything we can. So it's great. You can also find me over on that network doing Literary Treks and The Orb with Chris Jones. Literary Treks is about the books and the comics of Star Trek, and then The Orb is about Star Trek Deep Space Nine. And here on the Nerd Party Network, doing Aggressive Negotiations with John Mills every week. And we're talking about Star Wars. It's a Star Wars show. So if you love Star Wars, this is the show for you. But you know what? Thank you so much for checking your Owl Post.
Mischief managed.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.